You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up at 7 tonight, it's Latino USA. Tonight, the show follows the journey of one quinceañera, Haley Alexis, from Whittier, California, as she plans for the big day. That's tonight at 7 o'clock on Latino USA. First, earlier today, President Obama gave his final speech to the United Nations General Assembly. In the speech, he told world leaders that there's been a lot of progress over the last 8 years, particularly with globalization, but that globalization has also led to tensions between nations and between governments and the people.
I believe that at this moment, we all face a choice. We can choose to press forward with a better model of cooperation and integration, or we can retreat into a world sharply divided and ultimately in conflict along age-old lines of nation and tribe and race and religion.
Andrew Kidd joins us now to break down the president's speech. He is a professor in the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison. Andy, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, listening back to this speech from earlier today, what themes jumped out at you?
Well, it's a more somber speech than some of the earlier ones that he delivered. There's a little bit less optimism. It's more chastened by experience, which I think stands to reason, given that the progress he might have hoped for hasn't been as forthcoming as he would have liked. As you saw in that clip, the opening clip, a big theme of it was sort of reaching out and connection and globalization and trade versus the forces that are opposed to that, more nationalist, isolationist, anti-immigration sorts of forces. And he's obviously referring in part to the U.S. presidential campaign that's going on right now, but it's also in other countries in the world. You find this in Europe with a lot of anti-EU sentiment, a lot of anti-refugee sentiment, and you find it in other regions of the world as well. And he's just articulating that divide and trying to line up on the side of maintaining connection, maintaining exchange, but trying to manage it in a more in a way that sort of reduces the downsides that a lot of people are feeling from it.
Now, in that speech, President Obama outlined a growing contest, as you said, between authoritarianism and liberalism right now. And you said some of this language is a commentary on the election cycle, but he didn't seem to directly reference the election or name Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton by name, at least that I heard. Why do you think that was?
Why didn't he name them directly? Well, this is a speech at the UN. He doesn't want to get down into the muck of a presidential campaign that's pretty mucky at this point, so I think he wants to take the high road there. In addition, it's an international audience, and it's true that these sorts of debates and issues are being seen all over the world in one form or another. So I think he's trying to keep it at a more general level in that regard.
Another aspect of the speech, he laid out a few things he said world leaders needed to work on, essentially saying that in some areas they needed to do better.
We all have to do better as leaders in tamping down rather than encouraging a notion of identity that leads us to diminish others.
And what do you think the president is getting at with that, tamping down a notion of identity that leads us to diminish others? What is he saying?
Well, I mean, one thing that was that kind of struck me about the speech, actually, is that he makes some pretty pointed remarks about the Middle East and about the role of fundamentalist or extremist Islam, really directly criticizing extremism in that context, talking about how there are places where the public sphere has been shut down outside of the mosque and we have too much fundamentalist Islam being directed in a negative sense towards other religions, other peoples. So that was actually one theme that was there in the speech. I think that was the most prevalent one. And I think he's frustrated by what has gone on in the Middle East, and he feels that he and other people, of course, had a lot of hopes for what might happen in the region with the Arab Spring. Those hopes are more or less dashed at this point, in some cases very severely dashed, of course, in Syria and in Libya. and even in Egypt. And I think he feels partly responsible for that, but as he tried to point out at one point towards the end, that there are limits to what the United States can do, and really it's in the hands of countries in the region to try to chart their own course in terms of the ideas or the philosophies that are going to be represented and sort of advanced in that region.
And in general, looking at this speech, looking back over the last 8 years, what kind of foreign policy legacy do you see the president leaving once he leaves the office?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, he, of course, came into office hoping that he would be able to mend fences with countries that had bad relations with the previous administration under George W. Bush. And hoping that he could tackle problems that the Bush administration had not been able to solve. And he made progress in some ways, but in some cases there's been progress and subsequent regress. Relations with Russia actually improved in the first half of the Obama administration, although we don't think about that much these days. There was an arms control treaty that was signed, and relations with Obama and Medvedev, who was the president at that time, seemed reasonably good. Only to have that progress fall apart subsequently as Putin came back in and then go sharply negative once, of course, the Ukrainian revolution took place and overthrew the Putin ally who was in charge of Ukraine at that point, and subsequent invasion of Crimea and eastern Ukraine by Russia. So things were actually much better at one point, but then that proved to be short-lived. He made some progress on climate negotiations, fairly recently getting even China to agree to limit its output of industrial gases that are resulting in global warming. So that's something he can point to. And on the Middle East side, his ambition, of course, was to wrap up the wars, to get out of Afghanistan or to get out of Iraq. And he did that in Iraq, and subsequently things went sharply downhill, and we had a return to civil war in Iraq and the rise of the Islamic State. With the Arab Spring, of course, the Syrian state started weakening, and the Islamic State took hold in Syria and then came back into Iraq and became the menace that it has been over the past several years. So things really didn't go well in that regard, to put it mildly. They've gone extremely badly. And even in Afghanistan, he tried to repeat what the Bush administration had done in terms of a surge to try to end the civil war there in a definitive way, and made some progress, but didn't really quite achieve the results that he had hoped for. And so it's been very difficult to disentangle there as well. So in that regard, he's really had a hard time trying to achieve even the limited goal of trying to extract the United States from what he would certainly characterize as mistakes of the previous administration.
We're talking with Andy Kidd right now from UW-Madison's Department of Political Science, talking about President Obama's last address as a sitting president to the UN General Assembly. And Andy, we're talking about a number of initiatives there that were begun one way and finished a different way, didn't exactly finish according to the president's plan. Are there things that you could point to and say, in particular, these things have been successful? You mentioned the Paris Accord looking to lead in that direction so far. Anything else?
Yes, well, that's the interesting aspect, that there's two things you could point to as sort of high-profile successes. I would say that in the background, the gloom and doom is perhaps overly drawn. There has been progress in many areas of the world, as he mentioned. It isn't always highly visible, dramatic events, but there has been a general continuation of the progress towards democracy and economic development and such. But in terms of high-profile initiatives, yes, the two big ones you could point to, the Paris Accords on global warming and the Iran nuclear deal, really. And the interesting thing about them is that the jury is in some sense still out as to whether they're going to be successful. The Iran deal, it's about a year old now, seems to be still operating. We have pretty good verification of what's going on inside Iran. However, the deal is still very much subject to political backsliding, both on the Iranian side and on the U.S. side. The Republican candidates were practically unanimous in saying that they would reject the Iran deal, try to renegotiate it at the very least, certainly put it in jeopardy, if not abandon it on day one, and some of them claimed that they would. So if Donald Trump, for instance, were to win the presidency, it's unclear what would happen to that deal. It's unclear what will happen to that deal based on the vagaries of Iranian politics. If they have a turn towards the hard line for any number of reasons, it's conceivable that the deal could fall apart because of that. So it does seem to be working. It's very ambitious. It's well worth trying, but it may not ultimately solve the problem.
Andy Kidd stays with us now from UW-Madison's Department of Political Science, and we're looking at the president's last address to the UN General Assembly that happened earlier today. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think President Obama's foreign policy legacy will be? And what do you think of his speech today at the UN? Do you think the United States should welcome more refugees into the country? That's a topic the president talked about today. You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we'll get to your calls and continue our conversation in just a bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're picking up our discussion now with political scientist Andrew Kidd about President Obama's speech at the UN General Assembly today, the last time he addresses that particular group as a U.S. president. And we're taking your calls now at 800-642-1234. As the president's final term comes to an end, how do you think history will remember him, particularly in the area of foreign policy? What do you think that legacy will be? And how do you think future analysts will rate his foreign policy initiatives? What about that speech today? You can call us at 800-642-1234. And you can also share your thoughts on the Central Time Facebook page. Now, in the speech today, President Obama said that America has been a rare superpower that acts above self-interest. And he goes on to say this.
That while we've made our share of mistakes over these last 25 years, I've acknowledged some, we have strived, sometimes at great sacrifice, to align better our actions with our ideals. And as a consequence, I believe we have been a force for good.
America has been a force for good. Do you think that is a sentiment that is shared by other world leaders and allies?
Well, some other world leaders, of course, and some would beg to differ, I'm sure. But look, I think what Obama is saying is the United States over the past 20 years or so since the end of the Cold War has had, 25 years, has had an unprecedented level of power in the world. There's no really obvious forerunner for the amount of difference, in a sense, between American military power and even economic power and those of the nearest competitor. So it's been what people call a unipolar world, where the United States is the unipolar. There's no longer bipolarity, much less multipolarity. Now, we may be seeing that era coming to a close, but the thing that's going to bring that to a close is the rise of China. But that's still in the long run, at least in the medium run, like 10 or 20 years. They're not a competitor yet. The military likes to call them China and Russia near peer competitors, but not actual peer competitors yet. And given that amount of power, like most states with that amount of power have really used it, right? Most states use just about all the power they've got to annex territory or install puppet regimes or basically to run a fairly tight ship and control what's going on. And the United States has been much less dominant in that sense, much more willing to still work through international institutions that were founded during the Cold War, such as NATO, such as the United Nations itself, much more hesitant to try to impose their will directly via military power in many parts of the world. So I think that's basically true. Now, of course, there are exceptions, right? And the Middle East is a huge exception. And the George W. Bush administration's policy, especially in the early years, was the big exception. Now, 9/11, of course, was a very rare and unusual event that directly precipitated the U.S. Intervention in Afghanistan. The war in Iraq is much more of a war of choice. We didn't have to do it. It wasn't really related to Iran. I mean, sorry, it wasn't really related to 9/11. And many people view it in retrospect as an enormous mistake, not just because of the fact that there were no weapons of mass destruction, and so the original justification for the war wasn't real, but because of the whole chain of consequences leading up to the rise of ISIS that we're still grappling with today. And so from the perspective of the Middle East, saying that the United States exercises its power with restraint rings a little bit hollow. Same thing could be said in Libya, where there's a dictator, Gaddafi, who had basically given up his nuclear weapons program, turned to the West, but we sided with the rebels against him anyway and helped them overthrow him. And that has led to additional years of anarchy and civil war and the rise of Islamic State franchise there. So there are cases where we have not been restrained, and some cases that were disastrously so. So it's understandable that there's some people who would criticize that. And, of course, other countries will criticize it for more self-interested reasons, like Russia and China, who simply don't want us to be exercising power in their peripheries. But more generally, certainly look at the Middle East, you could certainly be excused for taking that with a grain of salt.
And diplomacy, despite all the things you said, diplomacy seems to be have been the president's primary tool, the way he preferred to work. Do you think that legacy of diplomacy, such as it is, not always, but do you think that legacy of diplomacy is something that a history will look back and say was a prudent way to proceed?
By and large, in the sense that, as Obama once said, his chief concern was to avoid doing stupid things or stupid stuff or something, some phrase like that. Again, more pointedly, avoid making mistakes on the magnitude of the Iraq War. So, yes, it's better to be diplomatic and try to achieve results through negotiations than to destroy stable regimes and unleash anarchy upon the world. That's certainly true. The big debate really is whether diplomacy, or to what extent diplomacy, needs to be backed up by the threat of force. And typically in American interactions with the world, in particular in the portions of the world where there's more instability and there are more forces certainly opposing our will, the sense has been you need to have diplomacy for sure, but you need to have the threat of force in the background. And a lot of people have been critical of him with respect to Syria, both within the State Department, in the military, for not backing up American threats with sufficient backing up American diplomacy with sufficient willingness to use force. Not that we should intervene in some full on way, trying to overthrow the Syrian government directly, but that we should use force in more limited fashions, perhaps to break sieges, to try to punish the Assad regime for engaging in attacks upon civilians, things like that, that we could have tried to put a little bit more teeth behind our diplomatic positions, and we might get a little bit more cooperation out of actors like Russia or the Syrian regime. So I think that's the real axis of debate there.
Andrew Kidd is with us right now. He's a professor in the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison. As we look at President Obama's last speech at the UN General Assembly, and the president also mentioned refugees in his speech and the way that he hoped the world would accommodate them. Here's what he said.
Ultimately, our world will be more secure if we are prepared to help those in need and the nations who are carrying the largest burden with respect to accommodating these refugees.
Now, in the UN General Assembly, how is the influx of refugees from Syria into the rest of the world, how is that being digested in other key states?
Well, it's a very controversial issue. I think the rise, both in Europe and in the United States, of anti-immigrant sentiment is unmistakable. So in the countries of Europe, you're seeing that all the way from Greece up to Germany. Angela Merkel recently suffered an electoral loss over the immigrant issue, in part. And so I think that's something that's a very tough sell at this point. I think a more practical minded policy would be to try to, well, of course, to try to end the civil war. That's number one. But absent that, trying to provide for the refugees more in a place closer to where they are from, with the idea that they would go back to Syria at some point. I mean, that said, we should, of course, do our part of whatever effort is being done to try to support refugees. But it's a very difficult sell politically in the current climate.
And we leave it there. Andrew, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was Andrew Kidd. He's a professor in the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison. And he was with us there talking about President Obama's final speech to the United Nations General Assembly. The president addressed the assembly earlier today. I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.